cause of many, if not most, of the crimes. I'm not saying it's a cause, it's involved in the crimes. And essentially what we do is we dry them out in jail or prison, because we don't keep them on drugs, and they go back into the community and fall right back into drugs.
You don't keep them on drugs, but apparently there's quite a traffic with
them. We don't intend to keep them on drugs. It's not our intent, and I say that in that we don't do the methadone as they do in some other states, particularly New York. But you're absolutely correct. Drugs do enter prison, and any time you have access between the public and inmates, as we do in prisons and in contact visiting, you're going to have drugs in. Drugs can come in other ways. Efforts, I've had this problem in my own jails. You continue to be diligent. You continue to do random urinalysis to identify those that are getting them. But you cannot keep everything out. It is completely impossible to do that. I served on the president's, as a presidential appointee by President Reagan, to the White House Conference for Drug-Free America. And one of the dilemmas that the conference went through last May in its final deliberations was that there isn't a great deal known about successful drug treatment programs. There are individuals who will claim that they're successful programs, and I think there are some. That doesn't mean we shouldn't try to do something. We have to do things. And I think there are some successes around. What the White House conference recommended was that the administration and Congress designate, and my recollection was the Science Foundation, do the necessary research to identify and duplicate, identify the successful programs around the country, and then be prepared to, through technology transfer, get that out to the communities. We're not only talking about non-incarcerative types of treatments, but also those that are ones in which the general public can participate in. Currently, there are just not enough programs available. If someone in Multnomah County is sentenced on probation conditioned on being in a drug program, they may wait 30 to 60 days to be even examined for the program. And if I'm walking in off the street and need drug treatment in one of these programs, I will wait 6 months. Well, I think it's quite obvious that if I'm a drug addict and I'm burgling to feed my habit or doing other kinds of crimes that are ones in which I can raise funds, I'm going to continue doing it and probably forget that I wanted to do 6 months ago to go into a program. That's an area that is sadly lacking, and it was recognized by the task force.
Okay.
I have one other.
Yeah.
I know.
I want to follow up on this one.
Oh, you want to follow up on the DNA and drug and alcohol?
Yeah.
Oh, please do that.
One quick question.
Sure.
Get
no,
back
no.
To you.
That's fine.
I guess if this committee comes up with a package of discretionary funds, which could be accessed by local community nonprofits and programs that are existing for expansion, replication, and training of people to start additional programs that we know are successful, would you be the kind of person who would be down in Ways and Means saying, we don't want to do this? Because we've gotten some additional requests from the governor's office that says we want to accelerate some things, and if the legislature decides that along with accelerating some things and putting some additional money in, that we want to put this side, we want to bring this side up to standard as well. What's your position? What do you? And I know you got to check with the governor, but I need to know how you feel about it personally. As a follow-up to Senator Shoemaker's said.
Philosophically, I'm very supportive of those. I personally contracted with several programs, both with general fund county money that was discretionary for that purpose, and with community corrections funds, with Carol Pope, with the YW, with several programs. I think we have to continue to try to find the private sector programs that work. And my philosophy is, and again, I would have to check with the governor, obviously, but my philosophy is that it is absolutely necessary that we provide the tools of the community to assist those people who leave prison and jail, to assist those people who may be sentenced to probation conditioned on having those kinds of facilities and programs available. If we're going to do anything to change behavior, it is going to be those kinds of programs that people will accept and take advantage of. We don't rehabilitate anybody, but we have to provide the means with which they can rehabilitate themselves. And many people need that kind of transitional service, if you will, as we do with the Carol Pope program and the YW program in my own county. And I'm very supportive of that, Senator.
Good. Senator Shoemaker.
One other area I'd like to look into a little bit. A lot of the people, many of the people that are in our prisons, their lifestyle is in part due to the fact that they can't even read.
That's true.
There have been suggestions that we ought to put more emphasis on, while they're there, trying to give them some of the basic skills that maybe they will use if they wish to get themselves out of the rut they're in, and thus some kind of a literacy program, maybe even one that's required. Have you some thoughts on that?
Well, I'm certainly supportive of the literacy program and operate GED programs in the jail, recognizing that jail is a short-term incarceration, so you don't have some of the long-term, those that are very, very illiterate. However, we've had a fairly good success rate in Multnomah County of that, and I'm supportive of that in the prisons. There are already some literacy programs in the prisons, GED programs, some college programs. I'm very supportive of those kind of programs. As to whether it's mandated, it's one of those things you may be able to induce people to go, but it takes sanctions if you're going to say you do this or else, and I'd have to look at what those trade-offs would be. But that's another area that I think we have to spend some money on and push for. I would like to see every prisoner in our system that's in our custody have work, vocational education, or just study of some kind as part of their everyday occupation. And that's a tall order in our current prison systems.
But if the head of the Department of Corrections thinks it's important enough, it's probably not an order that can't be filled.
I agree with that, sir.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, just a couple of things. First, I think the Sheriff's Association has called for legislation, more anti-drug legislation, and I know that my caucus has, Senate Republicans, and a member of the Citizens for a Drug-Free Oregon, which does. Do you view your position here in this new position as one to push for stronger anti-drug legislation, or do you maybe in fact think it's going to cause you more trouble? You'll be the recipient of quite a few additional inmates. Where are you going to lay in there?
I am very supportive of our ability to deal with our drug problem in a variety of ways. And I'm kind of stepping around this in a sense and trying to get to the fact that I'm committed to sentencing guidelines. The sentencing guidelines, unfortunately, because of the prison space thing, I think may create some problems of not providing sufficient sanctions for people who are committed as a result of drug crimes. We are doing nothing effective currently because that is considered a nonviolent crime, and nonviolent crimes in this state get very little sanction. Again, it's a dollar and cents issue. What are we going to put people in prison for, and for how long? And I have to defer, not having been a party to the sentencing guidelines and deliberations, that at least this time, that's their best judgment. And unless additional prison space is put online, I'm not sure that should take precedence over some other crimes that they have determined to be of a higher priority. I'm very supportive of doing that, but it's how many, you know, how much is it going to cost, and how much is the legislature willing to put out?
Would your priority be to try to get the additional space?
I'm most happy to try to get additional space. Okay. I think I have a history of that.
One last thing. you seem to have an uncanny ability to get some bad press from time to time. And in relationship, this calls for administrative management skills, of course,
right,
is what it is. You got a bad audit reported in the paper.
A what?
County audit. There were some complaints.
Oh.
County audit.
Sure.
I'd like you to respond to those.
Well, it was rather interesting, keeping in mind that the county auditor is also an elected official. And what was declared to be a management audit actually was as a result of my asking the county auditor to come in and look at my fiscal management unit and make recommendations for change. I had on several occasions in the previous years asked for additional staff in my fiscal unit from the Board of County Commissioners. And they were not so inclined to build on infrastructure any place in the county, let alone mine, but they didn't in the central county general services at that time either. When the report came out, I was quite shocked because it talked about management of the agency. And in fact, they looked at two units only, a total of six people out of my 630-person operation, my planning unit and my fiscal unit, which I didn't have enough staff in either one, and said they were not able to provide me with the information I needed to make decisions. Well, and that we were late with our budget every year. I'm not sure that I wasn't provided with enough information to make my decisions. There's no question we were late with our budget. But I, you know, my response to that is that it was not an agency audit. It was, you know, a management audit of the agency, which I'd have been happy to have if that's what we'd started out to do. And they, in fact, looked at the management of the agency instead of two small units that I'd repeatedly asked for additional staff for.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Grinsky.
Sheriff, one thing I've seen sitting on the Judiciary Committee here is that a lot of people have dedicated a tremendous amount of energy and time to crime and corrections reform and actually, you know, getting the state of Oregon moving in the right direction. And I've been really very impressed by that. So it causes me a little concern when the guy that's going to be the head of the ship responds, and maybe, you know, you just didn't think it was that important, but when you were asked to describe why you're interested in serving for the state of Oregon, you say the governor asked me. I would have preferred I'm gonna kick rear and take names and no prisoners or something. You know, I want somebody who's going to really be putting in the long hours and making sure this thing is going to fly, because business as usual isn't cutting it in this state. And if your real reason is that the governor asked you and it'd be great and everything, I'm wondering if you really want this job.
When I answered that way, it was not meant to be flippant. Let me make that clear. But that is the reason I accepted the job, is because the governor asked me to take the job. I would not have accepted the job if I didn't want the job. I think it's the most challenging job in this state government today. Of a ship that's sinking, certainly meaning corrections, not the state. And I think that I bring with me the skills and the background to be able to put my finger in the dike for a while, get some of these things built, and make a difference in our crime that is occurring in our state today. And until we get sufficient beds to do that, if you took that comment as flippant, I apologize. It was not meant that way at all.
Oh, that's why I asked.
Yes.
Because I
certainly
pull these types of things out, and sometimes I just want to get through it. And you knew you'd be interviewed,
I knew I'd be interviewed, and I didn't give as much thought to having that filled out as I probably should, and I apologize for that.
I appreciate that.
Anything else? Actually, I, in the interest of time, I do have a support resolution from the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Bill Brooks is here, and this is signed by Sheriff Earl Tarno from the president of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Do you need to say anything, folks, beyond the resolution?
I would like to.
Okay.
This is Sheriff Armato.
Well, I understand that. Come on up, then.
I'll be sure.
Please.
Do you want me to sit back or stay
here? Go ahead.
Madam Chairman, committee members, like I told you, I'm Sheriff Bill Arnato. On behalf of the criminal justice system of Josephine Jackson County, we strongly support the governor's selection of Fred Pierce as director. As you know, Fred brings over 35 years, but he has some unique and vital assets to the Community Correction Division. One, he's earned the respect and support of all the sheriffs and criminal justice members of Oregon and Washington. He understands, too, he understands the correction problems on a state level, but most important, he understands it on a county level, which those two agencies must work together, and that's been part of the problem in this state. Three, he has the knowledge, experience, and most important, the desire to work with the governor, the legislators, and county government to solve Oregon's crisis in inmate population management. And I think most important, Fred is a man of integrity. He's not going to tell you just what you want to hear. He's going to tell you what you have to hear. And that's hard to buy. And my Senator Ron, being fair to Fred here, there's many, many times.
Go ahead. We're really under a time pressure. We've got a lot of people signed up on other bills.
I think about resigning. And I get bad press all the time, too. That's part of the game. And as political people, you know it. Thank you.
Senator Shoemaker, thank you very much.
If there are no further witnesses, I would move the committee recommend to the Senate the confirmation of the appointment of Fred Pierce as the head of the Department of Corrections.
I would just like to say before we vote, assuming that we do confirm this gentleman, that I wish him the best of luck and hope you will kick rear out there because we need him.
I think I can say from knowing a little bit about Multnomah County that you can expect that that will occur.
Great.
Madam Chair, I have just one very quick question of the, you don't have to come up. Pronounce your last name for us. Pierce.
Pierce, like the pocket.
Okay, thank you.
So thank
you. I don't know who we're talking about here.
Further discussion?
No.
Call the roll, please.
Senator Brennan?
Aye.
Senator Brockman?
Aye.
Senator Frensky?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you very much. Thank you, folks, for coming. Let's take up in work session Senate Bill 558, which is a bill which we haven't seen as this committee, and it would be my request that we, it would be my motion that we send, that I move Senate Bill 558 to the desk for re-referral to the Committee on Telecommunications and Consumer Affairs. This has been a request of Senator Jolin. It is her bill. The President's office has suggested that would be okay, so I would move that Senate Bill 558 be referred to the desk for re-referral purposes. Are there discussion? Call the roll, please.
Oh.
Aye.
Senator
Grunsky? Which bill? It's just a motion to refer.
Aye.
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 Oh,
aye. Motion carried. Thank you very much. Now we also have a bill for introduction. It's LC 3448. The requester is the Oregon Department of Justice. It requires persons who have committed sex offenses to submit blood sample for forensic analysis. And it does deal with the specifics of procedure for taking such a sample. It has, again, the requester is the Oregon Department of Justice, has come to us from the Rules Committee. I would, are there objections to us introducing LC 3448 at, as a committee bill? Hearing none, so ordered. Then let's move into our, I guess we have some witnesses who are not here yet, Catherine. Who haven't seen? Elizabeth Stockdale is
She's here. I think they're either out in the hall or I can round them up.
Okay, let's move to House Bill 2192, the bill that we've had hearings on before. It is scheduled for public hearing and work session today. We have had amendments requested. We've had testimony on those amendments. The committee requested that Elizabeth Stocktail and Richard Munn come to us to talk about the confidentiality of tax records. And they are here. Elizabeth? Yes, why don't you go ahead, Catherine?
The Dash 3 amendments are submitted from the Forest Product Council. You have in front of you a hand-engrossed version of them. They're Dash 3. You also have a hand-engrossed bill. The Dash 3 amendments, first of all, retain the emergency clause, and second, make the amendments retroactive to cover all information that has not yet been disclosed. They prohibit disclosure of the particulars from the timber tax returns and the amount of taxes. Those two items can't be disclosed. It doesn't prohibit disclosure for regulatory or enforcement. I'm sorry. Let's do it again.
Does not. Right. You said you weren't clear on your doesn't.
Okay.
Does
all right.
Not.
Does not prohibit disclosure for regulatory or enforcement purposes, and would still allow disclosure when it is in the public interest.
Sometimes Catherine's Boston accent gets in the way of the tape understanding exactly what it says. Okay. And we have Elizabeth here, who is the from the AG's office, who drafted the opinion that is been at issue here, I would say. Go ahead, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Elizabeth Stocktail, attorney in charge of the tax section of the Department of Justice. I understand that you're considering amendments that would protect timber tax returns from disclosure. I'm not certain how much you want to talk about the opinion. We advised the Revenue Department that currently there was no statutory provision that precluded disclosure of timber tax returns.
I suppose the committee was interested in why in 1977 or previous to that time there was an attorney general that said they were confidential, and then in intervening years we get yet another AG opinion. So is there what happened in the time, or is it just the sort of difference of opinion of attorney generals, or what happened in the intervening time to make you or make the attorney general, whoever they were, change their mind about all this?
Well, the situation was that an opinion had been given in 1976 or 1977, and in 1987 or 1988, there was a request under the public records law asking for information from timber tax returns. The department asked us again to make sure what the status of the returns was. I reviewed that prior opinion and determined that there really was no basis for the conclusion. And I advised the department that there was no statutory protection for the returns.
Okay. Any questions for Elizabeth with respect to this? Okay, Richard, why don't you go ahead and discuss it more if you want to kind of lay it out for us.
I don't know what I was just saying you might want to remember, at least historically, the 1970s.
Your name for the record.
I'm sorry, Richard Munn, Director of the Department of Revenue. You might want to remember 1977 is when actually we adopted a severance tax. That session worked through the old ad valorem system that used to be on the rolls for timber, and changed it to the kind of severance tax you have today. And virtually, the law has not been changed much since that 1977 period.
We've all sort of went away to meet with the interested parties to try to figure out whether there might be some opportunity to gather information or to request information from the Revenue Department. that came short of disclosing exact information that was company-specific with company names and specific tax return related. Catherine, you want to?
Part of the question comes down to, you use the word particulars, and Elizabeth, you know, is that a term of art in the statutes, and what particularly does it mean?
In the income tax law, there is a specific statute that protects information described as particulars of a report or return from disclosure, and the Oregon Court of Appeals has interpreted that statute to refer to the items that go to calculation of tax liability. In the income tax return context, we would be talking about income items such as amount of wages, amount of investment income, dividends, interest, deduction amounts such as expenses, cost of goods, those kinds of particular pieces of information that a taxpayer includes on the return in order to calculate tax. That's what particulars are in the income tax sense, and using the same word here, we would probably construe that in the same sense, since it refers to returns as well.
At what level of summary information does it no longer become a particular? Do you have an opinion about that?
Well, a particular from a return, obviously, is a precise piece of information. When you're talking about confidentiality and maintaining the anonymity of information, you would have to have, and accumulating information, you would be accumulating enough so that it would not be possible for anyone from outside to determine what component of that accumulated information belonged to whom. So you'd be talking about, I suppose, three or more pieces of identical information being accumulated before you'd have that assured anonymity.
So if you summarized reports and had three reports summarized, it would no longer be considered confidential information?
It would not be a particular from a report or return at that point. It would be summary information in another document.
All right. Thank you.
Is the Department of Revenue supportive of this amendment?
Yes, we are supportive of the amendment. We're used to working, in effect, with our records that most of our records are, in effect, confidential. We do try to provide, like with the income tax and the corporate excise tax, statistical information so other people can analyze what the effects of either changes in the law or the effects of the law itself are on different groups of people, not an individual. And to that extent, we would attempt also to provide statistical information about the timber tax so that people that are interested can sort of find out maybe by market area or region of the state what's going on in a general sense, not specific to an individual taxpayer.
Madam Chair, does this list of amendments then make the timber tax returns
essentially the same degree of protection as income tax returns enjoy?
I think Elizabeth can answer, but I think the answer is no.
Madam Chair, that's correct. The answer is no. It's not the same level of protection.
Okay. What is this fundamental difference between the two?
Under the income tax statute that protects income tax returns, the only time the Department of Revenue may disclose a return or an item off of an individual return is to the taxpayer, to the taxpayer's authorized representative, or to a court that is making a determination about tax liability with respect to that return. Other courts cannot subpoena those records for other purposes. It's protected that extensively.
Insofar as gathering general information from income tax returns as a group, as you just testified, I take it that kind of compilation of data is available of income tax returns. Is that right?
Yes, annually.
You just testified that it was.
Yeah, annually we put out statistical information on income tax returns. Annually, actually, we pull a sample of those, and because your Legislative Revenue Office, and Terry's here from Legislative Revenue, does analysis and is also subject to the Secrecy Club having access to that information, they do analysis off those returns to help you deal with different tax law changes, estimates of revenue effects of changing the income tax in one way or another.
And that same kind of data could be pulled from timber tax returns.
Yes.
I assume under existing law. Never been any question about that.
Right, you could aggregate the data, and in effect, I think part of what Rick has been doing with others is trying to look at different aggregations of information and see if that meets some of their needs from the computer records they currently have.
This then goes farther than that and allows particular, I shouldn't use the word particular, allows data specific to a particular taxpayer to be pulled from that taxpayer's return by anyone who inquires. Is that?
Currently, the interpretation of the Justice Department is if somebody asks for an individual return on the timber tax, yes, that we would, under the law, would need to give
but
it
I
to
mean, with this, if this bill is passed.
Yes, I'd need to clarify Elizabeth's comment. So when you said no so emphatically that this amendment would not provide an equivalent confidentiality, then we need to know what you mean when you say no.
Okay, well, that's what I was explaining about the...
We're talking about the amendment now. We're not talking about existing status quo.
Okay, I was trying to explain the difference between this bill and the income tax protections that we currently have on income tax returns.
Okay.
And I-